Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Producer Zach.
Hi, how are you?
And of course, I am Sean Roberts. Together, we are your weekly dose. And as always, performing live here in Southern California, 10 a.m. on the West Coast, 1 p.m. on Delmarva Talk Radio. Hello, East Coast.
Yeah, how y'all doing out there? Thank you so much for joining us today. We're glad to have you and everybody every Saturday as we pay homage to our favorite radio gods, Mark and Brian, with the hopes of getting them into the Radio Hall of Fame this summer. Now, just remember, follow Mark and Brian, R-H-O-F, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on how you can get them into the Radio Hall of Fame, and we have until Friday, I believe, to still vote.
Yes. So, and we have all the links up, too, and the instructions for it. So, yes, for those who have recently followed us, thank you for joining our familia. We are so glad you listen to the show and you hang out with us, and if you'd like to talk to us, give us a little, drop us a little note, do it on the Facebook, the Instagram, on the, all the things.
Yes.
All there's links.
Stuff.
There's absolutely. Links for everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Social media.
Just click around.
And we got a pretty good show for you guys today. Not only will we be talking about how to get Mark and Brian to the Radio Hall of Fame again, but we'll be doing a tribute to our heroes today because it is the Memorial Day weekend. We'll also be talking the passing of the great Fred Willard. And we got lockdown pick-me-ups. And then at 10:30, we also have an interview with magician and illusionist Franz Harari. And you're probably wondering, well, who's Franz Harari? He's the one who helped Mark and Brian on their TV show.
And he has the coolest hair.
He does. He's got very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Even then and now, he's
yes.
got. So he's pretty
epic
cool.
Hair.
So we got Franz Harari coming on.
Ooh, I like that. All right, now,
hair.
Don't forget, did we already say that? You can
no,
interact
we didn't.
With the show, commenting on our website, yourweeklydose.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram, at yourweeklydose1. Find us on Facebook or email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
There's nothing wrong with saying everything a different way. Again.
I do.
Do you know what I mean? I think it's good. So not only can you download the show for free from our website, but you can also subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and, of course, Spotify. So just search for Your Weekly Dose, and most importantly, don't forget to rate and review the show for us, please.
Absolutely. And, of course, today's theme was Do You Believe in Magic? And once again, that was because of our guest later on today, Franz Harari. And that was performed by The Lovin' Spoonful. Great,
ooh.
Great band, I think.
I just love that name, The Lovin' Spoonful. Makes me want some cereal.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, I like it.
Oh, and, of course, like most of our music that we play here on the show, you can get everybody that we play on our sponsor, which is Amazon.
Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
You going to cue us up a little something fun there?
Yeah, how about some mouse clicks?
Oh, a click. So nowadays, more and more people are shopping online, and there is no better place to shop online than, of course, Amazon.
That's right, Amber. They have everything. So get what you want by shopping on Amazon. Just remember to use our banner.
Yep. All you need to do, guys, is go to our website, yourweeklydose.com. Click on the Amazon banner and bookmark it. That way, every time you want to shop on Amazon, you use the bookmark link. And by doing so, you help the show stay on the air.
Plus, you get all the shopping done with no big crowds. Or if you are like me and have trouble getting out to do your shopping.
And not calling someone to help you.
Amazon is...
Have pride.
They're to help you out. They even deliver your groceries for you.
Say that again.
They even deliver their groceries
for
you.
Yeah, you got to remember that one next time, buddy.
Yeah, here's Steve texting you. Come and help me with groceries. Love, Steve. By the way, don't actually do it because I don't need your help.
I've got Amazon. So, guys, if you're going to do all of your shopping online, there's only one place to go. Go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, and use our banner. Bookmark it, get the job done.
And I found out how much I can carry.
Oh, boy.
And shouldn't.
Yes, yeah. That's the thing.
So
if you're going to do all your shopping online, there's only one place to go, yourweeklydose.com, to use
our banner.
That's what
again.
You just said.
Hey, listen. Nothing is wrong with saying it twice. It gets it in your brain. I think third time's the charm.
Anyway, remember, when you use our banner, you help support the show.
Yes, you do.
Amazon, work hard, have fun, make history.
Shut up and take my money.
And remember, guys, when you use our Amazon banner.
Yes.
Speaking of.
When you use it, do the thing again.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I needed help the other day from you. With
yeah.
And that's in September. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Mark and Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mark and Brian. Wow, wow, wow. Mark and Brian. Wow, wow, wow.
Mark and Brian.
All righty, guys. Here we go. Mark and Brian for the Radio Hall of Fame. It's very simple. It got extended one more week, so
yay,
we have until May 29th to get this done. Here's what you do. You're going to go to theradiohalloffame.com. Click on 2020 submission. You fill in personality information. In the first box for the first name, you enter Mark Thompson. In the box for last name, you enter Brian Phelps. For the program name, you enter the Mark and Brian Show. Then, brief history, bio, or personality program. This is the fun part. You get to let the Radio Hall of Fame know why you want Mark and Brian into the Radio Hall of Fame. For industry affiliation, you enter Mark and Brian Listener. Then you enter your email and phone number with area code. Then hit the submit button.
You want to try that again?
Hit submit.
Hit the submit.
Hit it. Okay. Hit it.
Oh, wow, wow.
I just love this song. It's groovy. It's better than the original.
Oh, wow.
I should play for you guys what they actually did for this.
Really?
Yeah, because I edited
I'm
this.
I'm fascinated.
So, yeah. All right. So there we go. We got to get him into the Radio Hall of Fame, guys. Very, very important. Mark even announced it yesterday on his podcast. So we got to get this done. I don't know who we're up against this year. So last year we were up against Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, what, really?
Yeah. And
wow.
In that category.
Okay.
So the hard part about this whole thing with Mark and Brian is that, A, they haven't been on the air for, 8 years now, since 2012, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the hard part, number one. Hard part, number two, is that we don't have the pull that we used to have with the audience.
Yes.
So, granted, syndicated in over 22 different stations, Ryan Seacrest, who is still on the air, even though he pre-records like 99% of his stuff, though, is still on the air. I mean, he took over for Dick Clark. He mm-hmm. took over for Casey Kasem. He did his career right. But the thing is, though, is that just on his Twitter account, he has over 15 million people.
Is that more than Trump?
I don't know. Don't care.
We should check.
What sucks, though, is that it's more than Mark and Brian.
Yeah. Well,
because we've got maybe about 10,000 people total for us off of Facebook alone. So take that 10,000, put it up against the 15 million.
Yeah.
All he has to do is tweet once to say, hey, guys, vote for me. And he's
boom.
In.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happened last year. So We don't know who we're up against this year. We're kind of hoping that we do get in this year, though.
Let's so, do it.
Yeah,
follow those directions.
And again, go to MNBRHOF for any information on this. Laura Stringer is quarterbacking this thing again. We've been kind of texting back and forth, so she's doing all over and all over again for herself. And poor girl. And she did a great job, too, on Thursday. They did like a live Q&A with her and Dan Novak and on everything and told some great stories and everything. So she did a wonderful, wonderful job. So so let's see if we can get the guys in this year. It'll be really good to do
baby.
That. Absolutely. All righty, guys. Tribute to our heroes. You know what? This is Memorial Day weekend. It kind of kicks off summer for everybody.
It does. It's a strange time, though, isn't it?
It's a very unusual time for that, though, because we're just as the certain places around the country are just starting to open up, it's not going to be the same. But what we want to do here, though, was kind of give a quick thank you to all of the soldiers and military personnel that have served this country. I know personally for myself, it's something I could not do. You know, I've got nephews who have gone into the military and come out with flying colors. Mm-hmm. My father was in the Air Force. My Uncle Neil served with my father. My father-in-law served in the Coast Guard for 20 plus years.
Wow.
Very proud to have. And he's a captain. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah, and so very proud of that. My grandfather served in World War II. Of course, he never saw any battles or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Luckily, he stayed here on the mainland. But I've had a couple of other uncles who served in World War II who had gone over and fought against Germany. Some were in the Navy, fought in the Pacific.
Wow.
So, yeah, very, very grateful for that generation. You know, and anybody who serves.
Yeah, my mom's father was in the Coast Guard, and he was at Normandy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was when he died, and he was in his mid 90s. But he reverted back to that time in his mind when he was towards the end. He thought he was young in the Coast Guard and on the ship again. That was his dementia. Was he was back to that era.
That's
oh, that's like arsenic and old lace. They have the Teddy Roosevelt character that thinks he's still in the war. He comes running out.
Yeah. He did it. He'd yell at the nurses and everybody, and he was still. Do you know who I am?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I can't even imagine because, I mean, any war itself.
Oh, absolutely.
I've had uncles and family members who have served in World War II. The Korean War, Vietnam, Desert Storm, friends, high school classmates that were in Desert Storm.
Yeah, I've got a really good friend who was Amanda, who was a Marine in Desert Storm.
And, you know, it's not a pretty picture no matter what era it is, you know. So, like I said, it takes somebody special to do that. And
thank you.
Yes, mm-hmm. thank you very much. And that's what Memorial Day is all about. If you see a military person, I know it's hard because we're in this whole, you know, 6 feet distance or whatever. Go up and salute them at least.
Yeah.
You know, if you see them at an open restaurant or whatever, whether it's at McDonald's or whether it's at a regular restaurant, buy their meal.
Yeah.
It's to me, that is self-deserving. You know, that's one way to say thank you to those guys.
It's a small sacrifice, but a big thank you.
Absolutely.
It is.
Like
that. Absolutely. Steve, did you have anybody who...
The closest relative I had was my brother-in-law, my sister's husband. He fought in the Korean War, and he took some shrapnel like in the neck, and it was the way it was positioned, it wasn't going to harm him, but they couldn't really take it out because it was close enough to you know, have to go through things.
Yeah.
So he always had this in his neck.
Jeez.
Really bizarre. But he died some years ago. But I think that was, I don't remember, my brother was in the National Guard, but that wasn't anything. My dad was too young for World War I, too old for World War II. And
so he's perfect.
Yeah, both my grandfathers died in 1910. So,
what?
Wow.
Go figure.
Dang.
Well, you know, Steve.
You just dated yourself.
Steve is 70.
What?
I've got antique books. I'm like, this is from 1910.
Do I have a nice leather cover?
You're almost
you're
there.
You're fantastic.
You're almost there.
You're ageless. Perfectly ageless. Oh, wow.
My grandfather's story was very interesting because he served in the National Guard, I believe it was, in Texas. And then we moved out to California. He enlisted into the National Guard here. Mm. And then when it came time, as the war broke out in Europe and we were sending people over for D-Day, he was in a very unique position. They asked him, because you're already married, you already have a child, you can go with your platoon over to Europe, or there's an opening here in San Francisco that they need a pharmacist.
Oh.
What do you want to do? And he goes, well, I'm going to take the pharmacist.
I think so.
And so that's what happened. And so he went, and he went to, I guess, the base in San Francisco first.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, well, we have no records that you're being transferred over here.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe you're over in Oakland. Okay, I don't know. So he goes over to the base in Oakland. Nope, we have no records of you here being transferred over here. He was technically AWOL. But on the base, AWOL on the base. He got there before his paperwork even got there.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but by the time he did get there, though, basically, I think it was like 98% of his platoon was wiped out in Normandy.
Yeah.
So, and the few that did come back, you know, he saw them. They were in the hospital. They were missing arms and legs and other things and so forth. So, so he was very fortunate in that aspect. You know, very, very fortunate. So, Zach, any military in your family?
Just Grandpa. He was...
he was a nice guy.
Yeah, he's more like the quintessential dictionary nice guy. He actually was in Korea. He didn't serve any combat, so it's kind of like yours.
Uh-huh.
He was a corporal, so he trained troops in Korea. And he was actually supposed to go into combat, and my grandma was, I apologize, I don't have the names of bases, but it was in South Carolina, so if anyone knows like which Army base, main one was in South Carolina, that's where my grandma was and had my first uncle, and he just trained troops for a couple years and came back, and that was pretty much the end of it.
So he was fortunate then.
Very, because otherwise yours truly wouldn't hear, and we all know what a blessing that is.
Yes.
We sure do.
Wait a minute.
What?
Yeah. No, it is. Yes.
Oh, my.
Well, again, today is Memorial Day weekend, and so we know some people are going to, because the country is reopening up, they're going to try and do barbecues and everything else again and so forth.
Hell yeah.
You know, but remember why it's Memorial Day, guys. Mm-hmm. That's the key thing. You know, we lost an awful lot of men and women during the war, and even... Right now, I heard a statistic that with the deaths because of COVID-19, we've lost more people in the U.S. than almost all the wars combined right now.
It's like,
incredible. It's
more people that were killed
at
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
More men that we lost in World War II. More men that we lost in Korea and Vietnam. That's how scary this thing is. So I know, I understand people are restless and everything, but
be safe.
Please, guys, still be safe out there. And again, if you see a soldier, any type of military person, buy them a drink, buy them their dinner, buy them their lunch, whatever. It's the least you can do for them for serving our
country. Wear your damn mask around them too, you
heathens.
Really?
Please be safe.
Speaking of, did you guys hear Patrick Ewing has been diagnosed with it? He announced
COVID?
That. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. Like late last night, I saw that on the news.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy. Hmm.
All righty. Well, you know, every time we do this show, it's always hard when we get off and then we get news hits us.
Oh, boy. It's like a 1-2 punch every Saturday.
It happens, you know, that way sometimes.
We get off the air and it's like, bam!
It's like, what just happened?
Who's next?
Yeah.
No!
I didn't see anybody else or whatever, so because I kind of stayed away from the news this week. But last week, you know, as soon as we get off the air, and we got hit by losing the great Fred Willard.
It's a curse.
Comedic genius.
Improv genius. Yes. Touché.
kind of remind me of Tim Conway in certain aspects of when he would lead you down. He would just throw out things, you know. Mm-hmm. And real quick, Steve, our very own Steve Silva, mm-hmm. got to work with the man.
That's right. Back in 1987, we made a strange little live-action short called Ray's Male Heterosexual Dance Hall.
Say that five times fast.
Yeah. Well, it won the Oscar for Best Live-Action Short.
Really?
Yes. It was the one in 88 where Pee-wee Herman gave the... and then he got attacked by Ed 209 and...
Oh, my gosh. And,
yeah. Well, anyway...
Steve's credited.
Steve is legit in everything.
Oh, yeah.
He'll
get backstage and somehow Fred and I would just kind of meander over and sit next to each other, and we had these great conversations, and I asked him a lot of questions about his roots in Ohio and
He's a fellow Ohioan.
You know what? He deserves this. Steve deserves this right now.
Well, there you go.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Steve recalling his great conversations with Fred Willard. Steve, take it away.
In the park on Sunday afternoon with Fred Willard. I was amazed at how... I mean, this is totally honest from the heart. He was never, in front of me, an actor. He would walk on stage. He'd be, you know, he's there. He does his stuff, and he's funny, and just him. And he'd walk off stage as the same guy. And we talked for hours, and it was like I had so much fun talking to him. But he is one of the few straight-up nice guys I've ever met.
In Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah. He was just a pleasure to be around and talk to, and he's funny naturally. Mm-hmm. So.
And not only that, though, but Karen Volpe, who are mm-hmm. our friend of ours, she got to work with him. Mm-hmm. As well. So talk about 6 degrees of separation.
That's right.
You know, and everything. Because she was in, was it the Bubé sisters, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
And so the group itself got to work with Fred Willard as well. So
I'm proud to say I got to see them before we lost her.
Oh, yeah.
At Flappers.
Oh, I missed that one. I should have gone.
And actually, it was funny, too, because she delivered, because it was me, Paul, and Anna. And she deliberately, I told Karen before she went on stage, because she was sitting with us when all the other comedians were playing, and I leaned over to Karen, and I went, Karen, I want you to deliberately single out Anna. And she just looked at me and went, on it. And they just, they put her on the spot, and Anna was so bright red.
Really?
And she didn't know what to do, and she just looked at me. She gave me that look like,
you asshole.
You did this, didn't you? Yeah, yeah. And then Karen,
it's all your fault.
And then Karen just kind of went like, eh, yeah. She shrugged her shoulders like, that's what you came here for.
Yeah, exactly.
Miss her.
So, but, yeah, great actor. And, Zach, you got a little bit of something here with Fred Willard?
I sure do.
Right, let's go ahead and play that real quick.
It looks like Ling Wong, the rare panda
Anchorman.
At the San Diego Zoo, is pregnant.
This is a big one.
Fred Willard was a giant in the world of comedy.
If you put him in a race, who would come in first? If you had a little jockey on him going.
Yes.
Willard's steady career spanned more than 50 years.
If after I am dead and gone, you still recall my name, remember me.
I think it's
Well, Jerry, that's actually very pretty.
Well put. That?
Who wrote it?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? It's an old poem. Probably some old guy dead and gone.
When the master of sketch comedy became a fixture in Christopher Guest's mockumentary films that would pave the way for decades more big laughs on the big screen, Willard's quick wit and improv expertise were on display in cult classics like Best in Show.
Why didn't he put on one of those Sherlock Holmes hats and put a little pipe in his mouth? Are they ever allowed to do anything like that? Dress up a dog in a funny way?
No, that's not quite what the purpose of these shows.
But it would, I think it would really get the crowd going.
This is Spinal Tap.
These haircuts wouldn't pass military muster, believe me. Although I shouldn't talk. My hair's getting a little shaggy, too. Better not get too close to you. They'll think I'm part of the band. I'm joking, of course.
In A Mighty Wind.
Yes.
The Second City alum was a comedic actor other comedic actors idolized. Steve Carell worked alongside Willard in both Anchorman movies. He says, Fred Willard was the funniest person that I've ever worked with. He was a sweet, wonderful man. Coming full circle, Willard eventually took his talents back to television, earning Emmy nominations for his turns on Everybody Loves Raymond and Modern Family.
80% of comedy is surprise. The other 20% is wordplay.
Many of Willard's co-stars paid their respects on social media. "You were funny in your bones," wrote Eric Stone Street. Billy Crystal tweeting, "He had great wit, elegant timing, and a gentle spirit."
Stop it now!
For Today, Joe Fryer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Oh, you know, Steve and I were talking about Everybody Loves Raymond on the way over here. Yeah. I was just thinking one of the funniest things Fred Willard did on that show is when Ray's brother goes to ask his father-in-law, which is Fred Willard, for his daughter's hand in marriage. Uh-huh. And he just goes like, "I'd like to formally ask for your daughter's hand in marriage." And the audience just goes, "Oh." And then he just smiles and he looks at his wife and he just goes, "No." That was the funniest.
Wow.
Oh,
he's definitely going to be missed. You know,
All those Christopher Guest movies, though, they just all got to run and have fun and just completely improv everything.
It's said that Christopher Guest, when he did that, he would go out and just set up the camera,
mm-hmm,
and just babble.
Yeah,
and then mm-hmm go back and look at what he got, and then go, "Oh, that's I like this part." And so can you imagine how much footage there is?
I want to see all of it. I love all of them.
Yeah. If you get also, was it there's a special edition of Spinal Tap. And if you get that, there's extra footage of all the stuff that they did not put in the movie. It's basically another movie within itself. Because it's like 2 hours of extra footage.
Really?
Yeah. And it is just amazing, you know.
Ugh.
But no, Fred Willard.
Everybody. Just, I mean, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara and all of them. And then my favorite, Parker Posey, is one of my favorites. I love. She's
Parker Posey's great.
She's amazing.
Parker Posey's great.
Michael McKean. Everybody.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw A Mighty Wind, to me, I'm like, this is a Spinal Tap for folk people.
Yeah, totally.
People, you know? Yeah. That's basically what it was.
Christopher Guest is really into meta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're good. I don't want to get off the air today and we hear that someone else. I don't want to do that
anymore. I know.
I'm afraid. Do we stay on the air?
Yeah,
do
I think
we just stay on the air.
I think we're cursing. If we get off the
air,
right.
it's like
we're, you know, jinxing someone.
A death filibuster.
Oh!
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, today's guest is an internationally acclaimed illusionist and magician. He's also an inventor and illusion designer. He has become the go-to man for consultation, not just for magic, but for concerts as well. He's become an inexhaustible source of creativity. He has been called upon to work with some of the biggest names in the entertainment industry. Michael and Janet Jackson, Justin Bieber, Disney, Universal Studios, Steven Spielberg, and even his fellow magicians David Copperfield and Chris Angel. However, his greatest accomplishment was helping two local DJs look like professional magicians on their TV show, The Adventures of Mark and Brian. Please welcome to our show, Mr. Franz Harari.
Yay!
Yay!
How are you, Franz?
Pleasure to be here. I am good, and yourself?
Good, buddy. Glad to. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it.
You know, I'd love for you to just come over to my home, and every phone call I start, just begin with that little intro.
Oh, yeah.
I'm there, dude. I am totally there.
Let's record this voicemail for you. This would be perfect.
Absolutely. Franz, it was funny. I was going through the research on you and everything, and it's just amazing, and all the stuff you've done through all these years, though. Can you take us back to the beginning? First of all, where were you born, and how did magic come into your life?
Boy, I got a magic set when I was 13 years old. If you saw the movie Burt Wonderstone, that's pretty much me right there.
So, Burt Wonderstone, love it.
Wow.
You know, so I was a little kid, I got this magic. I was very quickly fascinated with not why these little magic tricks work, but I should say that not how they work, but why they work. In other words, the psychology of it all. Because to be a kid and suddenly be able to do something that your parents cannot do or your teachers can't do, that's very empowering. And I thought, there's something here. There's something bigger than just a magic trick, you know, and how can I use this? I mean, I don't know what you were, but when I was 13 years old, I was pretty geeky. And suddenly to be able to do something that adults couldn't do is very empowering. So I kind of kept with that all through, you know, college and high school. I had a scholarship to go to Eastern Michigan and University of Michigan for music. I was going to be a musical comedy star. I thought I'd go to New York and be a singer and all that. But at the same time, I was teaching myself to do magic. And so I convinced, like, the University of Michigan marching band into letting me do a bunch of illusions for their halftime shows, as well as the opera department and the theater department and so forth. So I taught myself how to do very big magic, big illusions outdoors on a football field in the sun. And I don't know if you remember, in 1984, beginning of 84, Michael Jackson burned his hair on a Pepsi commercial. I'm not
sure I remember this.
So they sent the name of his attorney on Entertainment Tonight, and I wrote it down. I called the attorney, and I said, look, my name is Franz Ferrari. I'm 20 years old, a magician from Michigan, and I can create magic for Michael. So I sent him a video of me making a marching band, the trumpet section, disappear in a halftime show. And I said, look, I can do this for you. And so I ended up getting passed around to a bunch of people within the record label. And finally, I got to Michael. He saw the video. The next thing I knew, I was flying out there. I met him. We instantly became friends. We were just a couple years apart in age. And from that, I designed all the magic for his victory tour, and then all the magic for all his shows after that. And then, as you mentioned, with that came to his sister Janet and everybody at the time, MC Hammer and Prince and LL Cool J and Kool and the Gang. I mean, worth one to five. There's so many names. It's hard to decide which ones are relevant for, you know, what I'm talking
to
here.
Just list them all.
Yeah.
And
you know, it was in 1988 when Michael said, you know, you should take everything that you're doing for me and do it for yourself. And so I took everything that I learned from the music industry, and I used those formulas to create my own illusion show to look like a pop concert. And that's sort of where it took me today.
Oh, wow.
So that's why it looks so close. Okay. So, but you said you taught yourself. So you really didn't have a mentor or anything like that then?
No. I mean, there's a lot of books out there, but I just sort of figured it out then. That's a lot of failure. I mean, it was really just trial and error and a lot of screwing up. And you know, anyone in this industry can tell you that you learn far more from your failures than you do from your successes.
True, yes.
And so I learned pretty quickly, you know. Also, there's nobody really doing magic at that scale for, you know, for sports events. It wasn't a thing yet, so there's really no place to go.
Right, okay. I know that it seems for many magicians, the magic castle, it seems like a rite of passage for them.
Right.
And did you see that in the same way, or did it matter to you? Because you seemed like you were doing something different.
26 years ago, I bought my home here in L.A. 7 minutes away from the Magic Castle.
Oh, wow.
I thought that would be a big deal. My career has kind of taken off and brought me overseas mostly. So I don't get to go to the castle very often, but the castle was such a big part of my life that I thought I needed to live near it. And it really is a kind of rite of passage, you know. Mm-hmm. If you've been there, then you know the theaters are pretty small.
Right.
So, unfortunately, I was never able to do any of my stuff there other than, you know, small little things. Mm-hmm. And that's the best part about the castle is you can show off to your friends.
Oh, yeah.
It's a place that you show and tell. So I kind of missed out on that. But, you know, it really was my rec room for a long time, you know.
Now, also, I know the castle for some magicians, too, they kind of use it as a gym, you know, a place where they can kind of work out on their show or work specific illusions.
Right.
Did you use that in the same way as well? Or
I did. Until my stuff got too big. But, yeah, if I had something that was small enough to fit on their stage, then by all means I would do it there for about 20 shows or something like that. Mm-hmm. I actually, at one point, this would have been like right around the time I did Mark and Brian, actually, I made a small airplane appear on their stage. And then to try to top myself there, like a year later, I did this thing where I made someone from the audience, I took their car in the parking lot, and with a live camera, I made their car vanish from the parking lot. So I was always trying to push the envelope and figure out how can I take this how can I take this venue and kind of make it bigger, physically bigger than it is? And then eventually my stuff just kind of got too big. So.
Yeah.
Wow, nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And it's amazing to see, I think, magicians go through the different stages, because I was fortunate enough to be a volunteer for Lance Burton one time when he was performing at the castle.
Oh, right.
And
right.
and then I get a little bit older, and then I see him performing in Las Vegas at the El Rancho. And then,
right.
you know, I go back another 10 years with my wife, and then now he has his own theater, you know, doing his own magic show or whatever at the MGM or wherever,
right.
wherever he was at. And it was just interesting to see the
Monte Carlo,
the Monte Carlo, see the different stages of a magician's career too. And yours has kind of grown that way also, but in a little bit different direction though.
It sounds like you're an amateur magician. Are you? Do you do magic yourself?
I don't, no, not at all.
Well,
but
now you do make food disappear.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
well,
buddy.
So I should mention that own little talk show on Facebook, Tuesdays and Fridays at 6 p.m. West Coast time. That's all for magicians. I get about 6,000 magicians from around the planet all coming together and talking about. I do these interviews with different famous magicians, and so jump on my Facebook page, Franz Ferrari.
I did that already.
And I wanted to bring that up too, Franz, because you got to interview a personal friend of Steve and I's, which was Chipper Lowell.
And, oh yes, of course.
And of course, we've known Chipper since his teens and twenties, I think, basically. How did that whole show come up about for you on Facebook?
it came about because I realized after about a week of quarantine, I was going to lose my freaking brain if I didn't have something to do.
Right.
I needed a reason to get out of bed. And what I do is produce. That's me. I don't care. It almost doesn't matter what I'm making, so long as I'm making something that didn't exist before. And so I thought, I looked around. It's like, well, I got Facebook and I got my computer and I've got about 300, you know, high profile, you know, magic celebrity buddies that I can pull in that are all equally as bored as I am. So which is sort of a natural. Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Chipper's actually the only non-magician I did, because I see more Chipper more as a juggler, as a physical comedian.
Yeah, I would say he's definitely a good mixture of the two of doing the magic. I think a lot of the comedy kind of plays into it more, and then he'll do an illusion, and then he'll do like 10 minutes of comedy again or whatever, and then do another illusion. You know, so I kind of see him in that aspect. So, you mentioned it that your biggest break of getting into everything here in the start of your career was working with Michael Jackson. What was it like to work with Michael?
Well, as I say, we very quickly became friends. Mm-hmm. So I have so many, many stories. It was great. Michael taught me so much. He was the introduction to the industry. I mean, before him, I was doing birthday parties and bar mitzvahs in Michigan, and suddenly, boom, I'm the guy, the go-to guy for magic in the music industry. So it was a huge jump. And to have him as a friend was a really great support, because he taught me he taught me a lot. He taught me the good parts of the industry, but also the BS parts of the industry. I don't know if I can swear on this show
or not. Sure, absolutely.
The entertainment industry, and especially the music industry, is a fantastic tapestry of bullshit. I don't know what your experience has been, but mm-hmm. there's so much ego and so much positioning, and I really had a crash course into that by spending time in Michael's world, you know. Mm-hmm. For one, because I became close to him very quickly, I found myself being resented by a lot of really big people in the industry.
Really?
It's like, why should this 21-year-old kid suddenly come in and be calling Jackson directly and be hanging with him directly and have his ear directly, when here, me, the 50-year-old producer, still has to go through the management and, you know, stuff like that. Hmm. So, and that was a shock to me. Now, I'm, you know, it's what we do. But when you're 21, it's like, what? Where did this come from?
Right.
You know, and I watched his, really, I watched the entire curve of his career. And there's so much that I learned from that, you know. Mm-hmm. But as I said, the biggest thing that he taught me was the mechanics, how to use light, sound, video, staging, wardrobe to create a product that continues to layer, you know. There's something that he said to me that has really become my mantra. He says, Franz, whatever you do, make sure you do it different and better than anybody before you. And I've lived with that. So that's really the biggest thing I got.
Wow. Very cool. That's amazing. I mean, and to live in that world, I mean, because that's, I think, when Michael really started to explode, where Michael was on top of everything, you know.
Right.
You know, to be a part of that and in the belly of the beast, so to speak, you know, I can imagine.
And then it got weird, too. Then it got really weird, you know, but when you're in it, you don't realize how weird it is. I mean, you do because all of your friends ask you, hey, so is it true? You know, but when you're there, it's not recognizable, you know?
Because you're in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Most of your magic that I've seen, you know, you've made the space shuttle disappear, Taj Mahal, cars, jets, buildings disappear. We've seen you make people fly or levitate. We've seen you make a wedding ring disappear and then reappear on one of your apprentices there. Of all those illusions that you do, what is your favorite type to do? Is it the small hand stuff or the bigger stuff?
You know, it's not that there's a type, but I get the biggest rush from doing something that I've not done before. I discover that my whole career, anything that I've ever done that's been worth anything, I've been slightly out of my league, you know, and I was never 100% sure if it would work or not.
Oh, wow.
And as my toys got bigger and bigger and bigger, now, even today, and I would never admit this to a client, but even today, if I take a gig for anywhere, to me, $500,000 to $1 million is good money, you know. So if I've got 700 G's, for example, from a client, there's still a 10% chance that it won't work.
Oh, my gosh.
But the only way to be able to push the art form forward is to take that chance. And because of the size of what I'm doing, the only way to take that chance is to go through the process of engineering and fabrication and prototyping and the whole thing. So there's always that chance that it could fail. But when it succeeds, not only have you invented something new, but you've pushed the art form forward for everyone else to follow in your wake. And that's really, really rewarding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so yeah.
It's like a metaphor for life, you know, right there. That's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like legacy stuff, you know? So I think that's what I love the most. I love doing something that's never been done, that's probably more ballsy than I should, but that's when it gets exciting, you know?
I love that.
Is it always hard to try and figure out going, okay, or let's say a client comes to you and they go, hey, this is what I would like to do or whatever, and you might ask them, okay, well, what are your ideas? And you go, I have no clue. That's why I called you. How difficult is
that's
that?
That's my life.
Oh, wow.
That's my life.
You know, but it seems like no matter what, you get it done. And it just...
To speak to that, let me tell you about my life in the 90s. In 1986, I did magic for Run-DMC. I did the Raising Hell tour. Uh-huh. In fact, when I see all these kids wearing their Run-DMC t-shirts, I did that tour. It was Raising Hell in 86.
No way.
And now I'm an antique. Now I am a vintage t-shirt. But that's a whole other story. So in 86, I did Run-DMC. I did a thing where I made them vanish and reappear and blah, 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 and what have you. And from that, I got in tight with that entire subculture, the early rap and hip hop subculture. So LL Cool J's guys come up and says, hey, you know the thing you did for Run DMC? We want that. So I come up with something for LL, but it's got to be different. And from that, I get calls from Kool Moe Dee, Eric B., Houdini, and then it eventually jumps over to Dre and Snoop and Tupac and Queen Latifah, and it just keeps going. And again, I always feel a little like a douche dropping names, but
no, drop away.
This is the story, you know.
We'll just get a forklift. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
you can edit all this out.
No,
so there was, I did like 30 or 40 rappers and people I'm forgetting. MC Hammer, you know, so many names, but every one of them came to me and said, "Hey, yeah, you know this the thing you did for you know whoever for Kool Moe Dee. I want that or." As an artist, you don't want to repeat. For one, it's stupid because if people see you repeating, then you're never going to work again.
Right.
But also, it's not rewarding. So it forced me to keep pushing again forward, never repeating, always doing the next thing, trying to go into the mind of the artist and say, okay, if this guy truly had magical powers, if this was kind of Harry Potter time, what would this artist do? You know, Tupac, for example. Tupac saw a thing that I did for the Dog Pound. I don't know if you remember them.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
So he goes, yeah, I want that. But he doesn't really want that because that's not Tupac. So you kind of talk to him and you say, okay, if you could do anything, and you really kind of spend time with him. I ended up doing this thing where there was basically a big steel wall on stage, and then you heard the sound of a machine gun fire, and you saw in the wall a silhouette of a person kind of and it formed a silhouette of a person with white light shining through the holes.
Okay, got it.
And then he kicked the silhouette forward and stepped through this hole that was made by the machine gun.
Wow.
So that was Tupac. That's nothing I would have done for any other artist, but it was right for him for that gig, you know? And so every artist that I work with, I try to get into their brains, and almost every time I have to do the work because all they want to do is copy the last one. Let me close this subject with having said this. The person I think who I enjoy working with even to this day the most is Missy Elliott.
Oh,
Missy is freaking great.
Oh,
she has become a friend. We've done over 20 shows together, 20 different illusions.
Wow.
She has done more magic than I think any magician on the strip right now. If you look at Chris Angel's show, I don't know how many illusions he's got in his show, but an illusion show will average anywhere from 18 to 20 illusions. So Missy's done 22. So she's a magician, even though, you know, she doesn't think of herself as that. Every time I work with her, it's completely out of the box. It's what the hell? Where did this come from? All right, let's do that. And that's a case where she will tell me what she thinks is cool, and then I've got to figure out how to, you know, realize that.
Right.
You're the true psychologist there. That's absolutely still
and that's a different
over,
angle that he's taking. Franz, when you do design an illusion for someone, obviously, you know, they pay you. But is it a one-time thing, or do you kind of get like a royalty kind of thing? Kind of like, let's say, how a songwriter gets paid when a singer uses their song.
It's usually, they own it forever. So,
okay.
If, for example, you do a show, I could create something for you and you'd own it forever. But the intelligent artists only use it for a tour because you don't want to repeat. You know, there's only a handful of exceptions like Alice Cooper that I did some stuff for, and he's been using that same magic now for 30 years because it's become his brand.
Got it.
But for the most part, in concerts, you know, you always have to keep doing the next thing. So if you repeat an effect, then that either means you're out of ideas or you're out of money. So almost no one will use what I do more than for one tour.
And
is good, by the way,
because
if I become friends with these artists, and about a third of the people I've done have given me back the equipment, including Michael's given me all this stuff.
Wow.
So my own show, my own illusion show, is largely made up of illusions that I did for pop concerts that have been given back to me. So it's kind of win-win, really.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's kind of cool. And does that also include fellow magicians as well, too? Or they may use it for a tour or, let's say, a short run in Vegas or something?
You know, I stayed away from working with other magicians just because they're a pain in the ass. When you work I'm certainly not going to name names, but when you work with magicians, they have this, there's this entitlement that comes with it. They feel like if they hire you once to create this thing for them, now you're married and now they own you forever.
And every time
there's the slightest little question with whatever thing you did, they're on the phone to you and it's just nonstop. And once I discovered these patterns, I kind of stopped trying to even sell myself to the magic community. And the last time I did something for a magician was maybe Chris Angel. That was 15 years ago. And Chris and I were friends way before he was ever, you know, famous. So it's a little bit different, but I've still got people from before 15 years ago that I might've done something for that are calling me because they don't know how to get the prop back into the case and
whatever the hell, you know.
So it's not worth the hassle.
It's like, dude, there's a foam cutout. Figure it out, you know?
Right.
Oh, wow.
Franz, you pull in an extremely, extremely large audiences overseas. 45,000 in Taipei, 40,000 in Peru, 30,000 in New Delhi, 47,000 in Indonesia. You've broken attendance records in Hong Kong, China, Singapore, Thailand, and Japan. What is it about audiences overseas that they come out in those large numbers versus us here in the U.S.? Are we missing something or not getting something?
Well, it's not just overseas. It's specifically Asia and Southeast Asia. And it's all driven by the culture. Firstly, I was able to create a brand for myself. If you go to India or Southeast Asia, people know who I am. I'm recognized on the street. That's not the case in the States. So I was able to create a brand. That's the most important thing. And then with that brand, the nature of what I do is very, it's just very friendly. It works for family audiences. My demographic of my audience is very, very wide. So I've got this very, very big reach. Let's use India as an example.
Sure.
The Indian economy is such where you can only charge about $10 to $15 for a ticket to a show because that's what the market will bear.
Okay.
So you can't do a theater for 1,000 people because you're not going to be able to make your nut back. So you've got to play places that are 20,000 seats or 30,000 seats. That's the only way to physically make the mathematics work.
Right.
Because you need to do you need to do that. Same thing in China. Oh, I think we're getting a signal from the Mir space station.
Oh. What's it saying? Make it disappear, Hans. Franz. Make it disappear.
Yeah, I just work here. Yep. So that's what it is. It's an economics thing. In order to be able to do what I do, you have to sell enough tickets to just be able to pay for the production. Where in the States, it doesn't work because if you're going to rent Madison Square Garden, you know, that the rent is too costly that you could never sell a ticket for $15. It just wouldn't work.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. No, that really does. That really does. But I'm going to say, though, I mean, but some of those numbers that you pull in are just amazing. I would love to open for you over there. I'll tell you that right now.
Big ego stuff. I'll tell you, it's, but you know, honestly, I never enjoy the ego part because when you're doing these big shows with big audiences, there's so much to go wrong. Everything in my show is my own design, as you know. So I'm really, firstly, an engineer. And secondly, a performer. And there, in any given show, there's hundreds and hundreds of possible catastrophes, complete meltdowns. And so in my mind, the left side of my brain is continuously thinking forward about 5 seconds in time. What's the next thing that could implode? What am I going to do to circumvent that? So you're never really in the moment. The right side of your brain needs to communicate with the audience and connect and, you know, be that guy. But you never really enjoy it because you're always anticipating the next catastrophic implosion, you know?
That's kind of true, because I always wonder when I'm performing, even the house concerts that I do and everything, of like, oh my gosh, am I going to break a string or not? And, you know, so that's why I always take a couple couple extra guitars with me and everything. So
wow, right, it's, right. It's
now imagine
intense.
If you have a power outage, what are you going to do?
Well, that's why
what
I use my acoustic.
In the venue, and in India we've had that. In India, in the Indira Gandhi Stadium, we had, I think it was like 15,000 or 18,000 people, and there's a power outage, complete blackness, and now you're in this arena with 18,000 people in complete blackness. So what do? You know, so after a couple of those, you know, that's when you
they're like,
your
you're
whole
the magician,
mind
Franz.
Changes, you know?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh, man. Of all the things that you've done in your career so far, being a magician, a consultant for others, designer for others, etc., is there any part of it that you would go back and do differently?
All of it.
Oh, wow.
Every single thing. I've never done anything where I've looked back and said, oh, that was perfect. Did that. Okay, that was done.
Wow.
Everything I've ever done. Because, you know, George Lucas said, film is never finished. You simply decide to stop working on it.
That's true.
So anything that you do, and I'm sure this is true for you, have you written a piece of music that you can listen to and say, this is perfect. This is absolutely perfect. This is as God intended. I'm putting it away now.
Does that exist? I think as a songwriter, you have to at a certain point, because I was in my career as a younger songwriter, I would sit down and, let's say, create the song, do the drums, do the bass, do everything. And I would come out of my room and even have my dad listen to it. And he goes, wow, that's pretty cool. I said, okay, well, I think it could be better. Hmm. And I go back and I try to redo it all over again. And from the first time that I did it to the last time I did it, I felt like nothing really changed. I couldn't make it any better. So at that point, 6 months have gone by and I've only worked on this one song.
Hmm.
You know,
right.
And so I'm going like, okay, yeah, it can't get any better. Now it's time to work on song number two, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Wow. I wish I had that experience. To me, I can always go back and go, this could maybe change this. Maybe do this.
Yeah. And I think for me, sometimes it's just to also maybe not figure out where to go with it. I think maybe, okay, that is it. You know, and sometimes you do have to let them go and try to figure it out. So.
Right.
But, you know, you brought up the films and everything. So many films have been done about magic, both drama and comedy. What is your take on films like Now You See Me or Burt Wonderstone? Is it more offensive, or is it more kind of like, oh, that's CGI, or, you know, whatever? Because I've had some friends who were, I've shown them Burt Wonderstone. They kind of like got a little offended by it.
Well, Burt Wonderstone, I actually watched a couple days ago. So
oh,
I watched
did you
it by accident. Yeah, I feel like I lived Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah.
I know that story, you know. I've been there, done that. You
are
know?
You telling me that you've had a puppy in your pants?
Oh, my gosh.
I had a bird in my pants. Yeah. So much of Burt Wonderstone, I mean, the consultants on that, our buddies Jonathan Levitt and even Copperfield, those guys know the industry so well that I was surprised how well it just hit the mark.
Uh-huh.
I did myself. I was a consultant on Now You See Me Too.
Oh,
so
really?
I know that process. And there's a lot of guys that are working on it. So it's not just me. I can't take credit.
Right.
So that process is okay. It's not for me very rewarding, because basically the experience is you're in an office, having meetings with the writers and producers, and then nothing happens for like 6 months or a year. And then you might get a call and say, okay, we're going to use this idea and we're going to use that idea, or not. So it's not very, you know, there's no gratification. It takes a long time, if ever. But the best part is, you know, you can say you worked on the show, but that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, as far as movies that have come out, The Prestige. Did you see The Prestige?
Oh, that's a fantastic one. Yeah,
that was very
so
good.
With the exception of the kind of fantasy stuff, the Tesla idea of teleportation and that fantasy element, everything else is very, very real. it's the magic industry is, all right, and I'll try to compress this because it's a whole character study here. The majority of magicians working today have little or very little or no talent. What happens is you get these kids like myself that discover that suddenly you buy a magic set and that's all you need to do. And if you know the secret to the cards, the card trick, boom, you can do the card trick.
Right.
So now you've got these no-talent teenagers that grow up to be no-talent adults, but they've had enough money to buy equipment and buy magic from guys like myself. So now they've got entire careers, but with no talent, you know. So they've become very, very protective of their secrets and very protective of what we call an empty box.
Got it.
And that leads to a crazy amount of thievery and piracy and the amount of theft that goes on within the magic community is absolutely ridiculous because there's very little creativity. Guys are just copying each other because there's at its core, there's not that much talent. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some fantastic people, including our friend Shipper,
right,
you know, in the magic industry. Fantastic. But not all, you know.
Right.
And the more time you spend in this industry, you start to realize, all right, where that division is, you know. And the prestige really shows this. It really that really tapped into that kind of cat and mouse piracy element of the whole industry. So I thought that was pretty great.
I kind of get that and understand a bit because I think for me translating that into musical terms, it's kind of like everybody wants to be the lead guitar player. But no one wants to be the bass player or the keyboard player kind of a thing.
Everyone wants to be the front guy.
Right. You know, yeah, everyone wants to be the front guy or the guitar player or whatever because they want to see it's that, like I think you said like earlier, that ego thing wants to get out. So you've got, you know, 15 million guitar players, but you may only have 200 bass players. And out of that, who's the best of the best, you know, kind of a thing. How long do you want to work and build a career out of that? So I can get that. I really can.
Wow.
Really can. Yeah. Well, Franz, let's talk about now the biggest phone call of your life. You're sitting somewhere, maybe at home.
What would that be?
Thinking about your next big illusion. You get a call from NBC asking you to consult on a new TV show called The Adventures of Mark and Brian.
Oh, yes. That was life-changing. Yes, it was. But that phone call didn't really happen.
Okay, how did it all go down?
I used to listen to Mark and Brian. I love those guys.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, for whatever reason, either I called them or they found out about me. I don't know how, but I ended up doing a couple of their radio shows, you know, where they're in the studio on La Cienega, right, you know, before you go over into the oil fields there.
Right.
And so I did their show a couple times and I became friends. And actually, this sounds terrible to say, but I used their, I employed their show to debut new material that was specifically for the radio, you know?
Yeah.
Because this was way before internet. So I had this idea to be able to do magic that was purely audio, which by the way, we can try if you want. Okay. And so I went on their show to kind of test things out. Some of this stuff worked. A couple of things just died the death, but in the process, we became friends.
Uh-huh.
So when the show came about, it was just sort of a natural. So I think, if I remember correctly, I think I got a call from either one of them or maybe their producer at the time.
Uh-huh.
But it was great. It was fun. It was hanging with friends, you know?
Right.
It was. I don't know if you – did you have a chance to work with them personally?
I've got a chance to get to know them. And my wife and I got to know some of the people behind the scenes, like Priva and Ernesto, during the tenure while they were on the air. But we didn't get to know them really close until after they went off. So both guys have been on the show with us here. But we've got to know them on a fairly good level though.
You know, by the time I'd worked with them, I'd already worked with a lot of pop stars. And so I assumed that I would get that same kind of ego going on, but it's very much the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, they're so unpretentious and almost irreverent, you know, it's, it was just like hanging with friends that you had met briefly, but suddenly became very close to, if you've had that experience.
Yes.
Mm. So I got very comfortable very quickly, to the point where we could experiment and try stuff that, again, probably we shouldn't have, because we were gambling with other people's money, you know?
Right. Well, how long did you work with them before shooting the episode?
You mean work on that episode specifically?
Yeah.
It's probably a month, maybe.
Okay.
Not very long. It's what I had done for them. I did this thing where they get into a box, they get handcuffed to each other. And so the premise is that they have to escape from this box, which is being picked up by a construction crane, you know, about 80 feet up in the air. And then something goes horribly wrong and the box falls to the floor and they smash and they, you know, they presumably die as they get smashed into a million pieces. And then in the distance, a helicopter comes flying in and ta-da, there are our friends, Mark and Brian.
Right.
So basically it became a kind of a sucker effect, where it started as an escape and then it ended up being a teleportation. So that is something that I'd done for probably 30 pop stars before, because that's a go-to, you know. I want to disappear from the stage and I want to reappear in the back of the audience. That's a real go-to.
Oh, yeah.
I did that for everybody, you know.
Classic.
Even NSYNC, you know, yeah. Justin Timberlake, and, you know, so because I knew that was tried and true, that the effect would work, I thought, okay, well, how can we do that and kind of up it? So I thought of this idea with a helicopter. But again, to be honest, I didn't truly know if we could time the helicopter out so that the helicopter could reappear at the right time. And so there's a lot of variables that I wasn't sure if they're going to work or not. Of course, I never said that to anybody. But but so the whole month of pre-production was spent on working at the airport, working with the chopper company, working with communications,
right,
working out those logistics, not so much the magic. Because
gotcha.
The magic is, you know, I do it in my sleep pretty much.
You said you had some concerns yourself, you know, of will this work, will that work? Did the guys have any concerns themselves of it working? Or
No. The guys were, let's do it. Let's just freaking do it. Let's just go. I probably, you know, let on to them a couple times that we were in new territory here. Uh-huh. But they were always about, no, let's go. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. They came over to my shop. I think, come to think of it, I don't know if I did one episode with them or more, because I remember we did the thing at the airport, but then I also remember they came over to my shop.
That was all
a bunch of stuff I was working on.
That was all incorporated.
Was that part of the same show?
It's the same show, yeah.
All right.
Because that's where you make Mark's ring disappear.
Oh, right.
And then
right.
The girl reappears in the water tank, right.
Yeah. So at the shop, there was just a lot of screwing around. And you could see, that's really where I noticed that these guys were different, because they were really having a good time. They weren't working it or trying to impress anybody. It was just really about having a good time. And I think that read on camera.
Yeah.
I feel like their audience knew that and kind of embraced that.
Absolutely. Now, of course, they did some other illusions, like, you know, Brian saw Mark in half and so forth, and where also he puts Mark on a pole. Were the guys surprised or shocked when they found out certain secrets of illusions?
I don't think so. I mean, I didn't notice any of that. Again, in this industry, it's just sort of part of the gig. I think that discovery process, it's just part of what you do. If they were, I don't remember any specific moment there.
Uh-huh.
Now, sometimes, and maybe even often, the reaction that I get is that the surprise comes from how simple a lot of the stuff is.
Because that is so true.
Probably 80% of what I do is psychology. 20% is a lot of engineering and mechanics, but it all comes down to understanding how people think. And if you can understand how they think, even to a degree, then you can begin to manipulate what they think. And if you can manipulate what they think, then you can manipulate what they see. And that is the core to what I do. So when that is all deconstructed and people see this for the first time, they're more often than not surprised by the simplicity mm-hmm. of what's going on, and that most of it's happening in their head, not a physical machine doing it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because I got to work with a local magician here when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
I got to do two.
Who's that?
Ross Rice. I don't know if you know who he is.
No.
Local magician, did fairly well for himself in the 60s and 70s mainly, and then kind of slowly did lighter things in the 80s and 90s. And I got to know him in the early 90s. And right. Nice guy, nice gentleman and everything too. But you're right. A lot of the secrets of certain illusions, they were very simplistic and everything. I'm going, oh, okay.
Right.
Wow, and you're right. It is a mind trip type of a thing, a psychology kind of a thing overall on it.
It's really, all of it is happening in your brain. It's there when our brains evolved. It's not a perfect machine. There are many, many glitches in our brain, and it is finding those glitches and then using them against you, using them. And in fact, I can even give you an example right now. Are you sitting down? You guys sitting down?
Yeah, we're all sitting down right now.
Okay. You can do this at home. If you're listening to this, just make sure that you've got your right foot available and your right hand available. Okay?
Right foot available.
So put your right foot out in the air. Point it out in space.
Okay.
Right? And now take your right hand and point out into space. So your foot's pointing and your hand's pointing.
Okay.
You doing that?
Yeah.
I'm pointing at Sean. I'm going to...
Yeah.
All right.
I'm pointing at a wall.
With your right foot, start making a clockwise circle.
All right.
Okay.
Start making a clockwise circle with your right foot.
Okay.
And now, with your finger, draw the number 6.
Oh, wait a minute.
It did it. Yes. Yeah, that's the right side of your brain, or that's the divide in your brain. What does that?
So that's
do you explain this
one
to
screw
us?
Up. That is a mechanical failure. It's one of those glitches that we all have on our wire.
Wow.
You've got so many of those glitches that's the sandbox in which I play.
Steve's trying to do it again.
Yeah. My foot still went like sideways.
Well, you're a huge glitch.
That's right.
And I'm right behind you. So.
There are so many things in the human brain that are topsy-turvy. We see, our brain flips the image. We actually see upside down and then it goes into your brain and our brain. There's so many things.
Right.
We're not perfect.
Right.
Fascinating.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Franz, we can't help but say thank you for coming on the show. There's a few things that we like also to do with you, though. The first one, though, is this is something that Mark used to do, and is kind of play the island questions. So, basically, you're retired. You're on a deserted island, and you can only take one candy bar with you on the island. What would it be?
You know, I have to apologize that you're getting drowned out by the ukulele. I can't hear what you're saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. Let's see if we can get that fixed.
and the virophone.
The virophone.
The virophone.
All right. How about now, Franz?
Perfect. Well, completely. I'll just imagine the ukulele.
There you go.
Okay. So, once again, you're on a deserted island, and you can only take one candy bar with you. What would it be?
Oh, well, that's a tricky one. If I had to choose, it would probably be almond Snickers.
Ooh.
But really, any almond milk chocolate product would work. So long, and this is important, so long as there was a means of refrigeration on the island.
Yeah, you can have that with you. You can have that with
you.
Has
to be cold.
Yes, I need a refrigerator and almond, almond Snickers would be.
That's a good one.
Well, you're choosing nutrition and something sweet and tasty.
Yeah.
Well, I'm choosing the best candy bar.
Okay. Opinions.
Right. Yeah. You can only take one album with you. What would it be?
It changes. There's no way. Depends on if it's happening right now, at this very moment, right now.
Sure.
In the Heights. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Really?
Wow.
But right. It changes like every six months or so. Yeah.
As it should.
Same
as it
here,
should.
Yeah.
You can only take one movie with you. What would it be?
Jaws.
Oh.
On an island. That's
on
perfect.
An island. There you go.
Yeah, I just think it's important to remember where I am.
very, very theme appropriate. Yeah.
Know your surroundings.
All right. What type of food would you have on the island?
What type of food? Any kind of high-end buffet would work.
Hawaiian buffet.
Work.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, buffet. I never thought of a buffet.
That's technically cheating, buffet. I think, isn't it?
Because you want selection.
You do.
Yeah. You
want
to be able to mix things up, you know?
Yeah, that makes a whole
lot of
sense.
He found the loophole there.
Yeah, that's a
great
loophole.
He found the loophole.
That's a great loophole. You could take one person for conversation's sake. It cannot be a spouse or significant other. Who would it be?
The professor. The professor from Gilligan's Island.
Oh, wow.
Because I feel like he's got the most experience, and he's just somebody I'd want with me there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, no one talks to the millionaire about trying to get off the island. It's always the professor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Here's a fun one, though. You could take one person for sexual gratification. Again, it can't be a significant other or a spouse or anything. Who would it be for you?
Are you kidding me?
No, one of Sean's questions, of course.
Hey, Mark did this to everybody.
You're married. You're married, and you're expecting me to answer that question?
Oh, my wife knows who I want.
Really?
Let's put it this way. We got to meet Brian one time. We ran into Brian one time at a strip bar in Vegas. And he bought us lap dances, and we bought him lap dances. So,
all right,
we're all good.
It's an impossible question to answer. I will just answer it with a quick little story in that my wife and I we can choose one celebrity that if the opportunity comes up, we can jump on him. That's the story. So she chose Antonio Banderas, and I chose this Japanese pop star named Nami Amuro.
Ooh,
oh, yeah. Steve just woke up for the interview.
Like,
yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
I'm looking her up right now.
And that was all fine for like 5, 6, 7, 8 years until one day I got a call from the management for Nami Amuro.
Oh,
and
boy.
I found myself working for her.
Your wife's
and
like,
suddenly
no.
I had to change my person.
Yeah.
How
I had
cool
to change my celebrity.
It had to stay hypothetical.
Oh, yeah. Or our producer just pulled up a picture of her. She's cute.
Oh, she's gorgeous. So she's gorgeous,
I just think there are too many variables involved to answer that question effectively.
Well, you know, it was really funny because that night when Brian bought my wife a lap dance or whatever, you know, my wife knows that I have a thing for Drew Barrymore. So we were trying to find a stripper who kind of looked like Drew Barrymore.
Oh, my goodness. That's ridiculous.
To kind of fill that fantasy a little bit and everything. And what's even funnier, though, is that the girl that we picked was wearing something from, Bath and Body Works? Or whatever. And it's called Warm Vanilla Sugar.
And now you brought it for your wife?
Karen liked it so much.
Well, you're talking about adult Drew Barrymore, not E.T. Drew Barrymore.
No.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly, yes.
Wow.
She was cute.
Oh, boy.
But my wife liked it so much, the way the stripper smelled and everything, that we asked her, you know, what it was. And to this day, my wife still wears that Warm Vanilla Sugar.
Oh, good for you.
So we always say it's stripper approved, you know?
Well, I have to say, Franz, my choice would be Missy Elliott. That's what
Missy?
I love her. I mean, I'm a lesbian, but she'd
I
be...
I can see that.
Oh, she's just...
Well, you know, I know her so well that I can't look at her objectively.
Let her know.
She's something. You know, there's
something
a lot
else.
Of work that comes with that.
See, I can't
see... You get
see...
the dogs and the whole thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
I can't see her other than the hip-hop star that I remember. Honestly, I didn't know she was into the magician
thing. I met her
thing.
Twice in Atlanta. Well, she just does it for her shows, I think.
Oh, okay.
But she's the sweetest lady.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
She was huge in, like, the late 90s or 2000s.
She's huge. She's still Missy. She's a tour
I met when
force.
She, oh, yeah. when she first came oh, out, yeah. Amber.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's great. The fan base that she's got is incredible. I've gone really all over the planet with her. And everywhere we go, you know, Europe, Asia, the Middle East, you know, tens of thousands of people come out for her. So it's like, man, that's who you want to be. That's who you want to be when you grow up.
She's so sweet. She's amazing. She's gorgeous.
Yeah. And that's what I heard too. She's very, very down to earth as
Ask
well.
Ask her what she thinks about islands.
She will like to hear that.
All right.
Yeah. Well, Franz, we have another game that we like to play with you. Well, it's basically just a simple trivia game. It's nothing more than a potpourri of trivia questions, just to show how stupid the four of us are. So would you like to join us for that?
It's what I live for.
All right, let's go ahead.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the new game show that inspired Bert Wonderstone's dad to have another boy, Quiz Me, Quiz You.
All right, so our producer, Zach, is going to give us all the questions. Franz, your name is your buzzer, so if you think you know where the question is going, just yell out your name and Zach will call on you.
Okay.
Okay, question number one. Which player from the 1998 NFL draft is considered by many to be the biggest draft bust ever?
Steve.
Oh.
I pass.
Steve always gets these questions. What do you mean you pass on this one?
I don't know his name.
Okay, Steve's out. That was easy.
Amber. I'm just going to go for like a shot in the dark. Maybe it's like Joe Montana or something like that. Okay, fine.
Nope. Rod's got an answer?
Not even a clue.
All right, who is it?
Yeah, that one was a little tough. Ryan Leaf.
Yeah,
I have no idea who he is.
Oh, yeah. Never heard of him.
That was a big bust, wasn't it?
No, sorry about that.
That's a big bust.
San Diego Chargers yet managed to win only four games and 18 attempts at their starting quarterback.
Oh, no wonder. It's the Chargers. Yeah. No wonder we didn't know them.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Well, we know question number two.
Oh, good.
How's everybody doing?
We're good.
Ready for number two.
You're good.
Okay. And what year was the International Day of Happiness officially established?
Steve. 1969.
Not even close.
This has to be a Nixon thing.
It is for me.
Let's see.
Oh, no. Let's give you a hint. It's recent, and I mean within this last decade.
Oh, gosh. Is it something to do with Trump?
No.
Oh, gosh.
2015.
Getting there.
Is it Day of a Penis?
No. Let's switch to that question.
Oh, it was about Trump.
That's a different game.
No. Was it the Day of Happiness?
No.
What year?
Oh, okay.
What year was it established? The Day of
Happiness. Yeah, the International Day of
Happiness. My birthday, I would assume.
Oh, that's a good one.
I wish it were that, but no.
Let's say 2018. No.
So far, Sean's the closest. Sean said 2015.
Is it even or odd? Just give
it's
it
even.
This. 2016.
I'm sorry.
The answer is
2012.
Oh, 12.
The General Assembly of the United Nations officially proclaimed March 20th the International Day of Happiness.
Well, good for them.
That's right. And good for number three.
I can't remember if I was happy that day or
nobody's
not.
Nobody's forcing me to be happy if I don't want to.
All right, let's... How about easy? Here's an easy one. Everyone, grab your tables, your seatbelts, whatever you got.
All right.
Who directed the film Goodfellas?
Oh,
Steve.
Steve.
Dang it.
Brian De Palma.
What? No.
Sean.
Sean.
But.
Scorsese.
Martin.
Amber called her name first.
Yeah.
Okay, Amber.
It's Martin Scorsese.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
I'd be a terrible actor if I didn't do that shit.
It's a terrible game. Question number four. How many Oscar nominations did The Shawshank Redemption receive?
Ooh.
Steve. 14.
No. Let's give Franz a chance. Take it one leg. Six. Ooh, no, but you are right on the edge there.
In that case, Sean.
Sean.
Five.
Nope. Amber, it's all to you.
I'm going to go with the lucky number seven.
That is correct.
I was going to say that.
Unfortunately, it failed to win any of those nominations.
That's true.
That's
didn't win.
Question number five. Let's see.
What are you doing there?
I'm just going. I know.
He's confused.
You know what? I'm doing this so Amber doesn't yell at me that I did the same thing again.
Thank you.
Which late night TV host aired a special live episode, the first even for NBC, after Trump's speech of the 2016 Republican convention?
Which late night TV
host?
Colbert.
What's that? Colbert? No.
Colbert.
Oh, it's got to be the other one then. The
Sean, do you want
to? No, I haven't called my name yet, so no.
Oh, sorry.
I'm thinking.
Late night host.
If it's not Colbert.
So at 2016.
He worked with Colbert, though. I know that.
I believe, yes.
Oh.
It's not The Daily Show.
He replaced Jimmy Fallon when Jimmy Fallon went to The Tonight Show.
Okay, Sean.
Sean.
Seth Meyers.
That's correct.
Oh, that makes sense. Someone political.
I knew everyone. Because I knew it wasn't Jon Stewart, so.
Question number six. All right. What is the name of the monkey in the Disney movie Aladdin?
Sean.
Abu.
Franz got it.
Franz got it, yeah.
Didn't have to call his name, but he still wins.
Oh, he got it.
He got it.
No, sorry.
No, that's good,
because I was going to say Peter Tork, so, you know.
Wow.
There you go.
That is so far from the truth, but...
Michael Nesmith?
No.
Davy Jones?
No. Question number seven.
Not the monkeys. Not those monkeys.
Mickey Dolenz? I get all four in.
Jeez. Brazil was eliminated in the 2014 World Cup by what team?
Okay, I watched it. It was Amber. I think it was England? Mm. No? Oh, was it?
Sean.
Shoot.
Sean.
It was another soccer team.
It's huge. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, yeah.
Amber.
France.
Yeah, let's give him a chance.
France.
Okay. France. Sorry.
I have no clue.
Germany.
I don't have the sports gene.
Neither do I. Amber guys.
Yeah, I watched it. I played soccer for 35 years. Give me a second here.
That's true. Question number eight.
I didn't watch soccer for 35 years.
I did.
What is the longest river in
come on.
South America?
Steve. Amazon.
I asked you.
That was easy.
Also, Lars Monther. Question number nine. All right, let's see. Steve's the sports expert, so. I'm trying to find a good one for you. Hold on. What is the maximum number of players permissible on an NFL team's roster?
Steve. 50?
No.
Wow. Is that just the. No.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know.
I would guess in the 30s. I would say 34 for some reason. I don't know why.
Steve's close.
I don't know. There's a lot of guys on the sidelines, so. I don't know, 55?
You're right in the middle, right in between there.
52.
God.
Is it an odd or even number? See, we're just.
Franz is going to say 53, I bet.
Franz is right!
Way to go, Franz.
There you go. Franz got that
one. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead and number two.
I get the idea. You're just sitting listening to this. Just laughing.
All right, let's do something I think all of us know. Red Stripe is a popular beer brand.
Amber. Jamaica.
Holy crap. Yeah, that is correct.
You know me and my beer.
Okay. Wow. With which year was it introduced, Amber?
My beer. Oh, gosh. Let's see. 1930s? 1940s? No?
No.
Okay. Something like that.
No.
Well,
1928.
Well, Franz, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And what are the days again that people can see your Facebook channel there and the interviews?
Look at there. Tuesday. Well, it's there all the time. Just go to my Franz. It's F like Fox, R-A-N-Z, H-A-R-A-R-Y, Franz Rai, fan page, Facebook. They're all there. But I do them live 6 o'clock Tuesdays and Fridays. And I was doing them a lot more when I thought this epidemic was only going to be about a month. So I was doing like 5 days a week.
Uh-huh.
And then as it kept going and going and going, I thought, oh, I'm going to run out of friends. So now we're just doing 2 days a week.
Yeah.
Well, very cool, man. Well, once again, thank you so much for being a part of our show and reliving your experience with Mark and Brian, because we are trying to get them right now into the Radio Hall of Fame. So we greatly appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine.
All right, you take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon, Franz.
Thank you, Franz.
All right,
bye, Franz.
Take care. I guess that's
all right. Great. What a nice guy.
Bada bing, bada boom. I've seen so many of those shows, those performance artists. I didn't know that was him, and I'm amazed because you're always like, what?
Yeah.
They always do some really cool stuff to open or like the middle of the show, and. Missy
now
Elliott.
You know. It's all Franz and Ronnie.
What's up, Missy? What's up, Missy?
And I think it was notable that I was not the one that used the Hans.
I did it. And it's your fault. You put it in my head earlier.
I know. Gotcha.
Oh, my God.
You had to do that to me.
All righty, guys. thanks again to our guest, Franz Harari, and also the show's website is yourweeklydose.com. Facebook page is Your Weekly Dose. Twitter is at Your Weekly Dose 1, and also for Instagram.
Yeah.
And for Steve, you can follow me on Facebook, which I don't go on often. Boy, it's depressing.
It is.
Anyway, it's simply Steve Silva. And then on Twitter, it's at SilvaLining69.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. And you can find me, Amber Ash McCary, on the Facebooks, on the Instagrams. Just my name.
And I'm as Zombie Mel Gibson on Instagram. Yes, it's really just Zombie Mel Gibson.
Alrighty. And don't forget, Franz's show is... you can find him on Facook at Franz Harari.
We'll post a link up for everybody.
Yeah, post a link up for him and everything, and check it out. And also check out our interview with our friend Chipper Lowell. It's actually a very, very good interview because Chip kind of also talks about the psychology of everything. Mm. So, anyway, if you want to follow me, Sean, on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other social media, it's simply Sean Roberts HC. Simple as that. Guys, go out, have a beautiful weekend. Try to enjoy as the country slowly reopens up. Mm-hmm. Be safe out there. I know here in Southern California,
be kind
of nice.
Be kind.
And also on the East Coast, be good to each other. And we'll catch you next week. Take care.
This week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.